Switching up the lane, girl. Pulling up beside you, wanna ask you what's your name, girl. But you're going too fast. Baby, slow it down so we can make the moment last, girl.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Final K Be Better podcast. We are broadcasting from Las Vegas, Nevada and CES, the Consumer Electronics Show 2018. We have with us today, we are blessed to be with Katie Hall from the United Healthcare Pro Cycling Team.
Hey there, happy to be here.
Hey, thanks for coming by. So you've been here with me for 2 days actually, working in the booth. And is this your first CES that you've been at?
This is my first CES, and it's a surprisingly huge convention here in Vegas.
They say it's the world's largest convention.
Oh my gosh. We haven't even seen all of it. We were only in this little side part of it, and there's still kind of more people than I've ever seen in a day.
I know. So we're currently in the C Hall of the Sands Expo Center, and that's like second level. There's a level below us. Yeah. There is a there's a whole like bunch of other rooms here. So we're just seeing it. Then beyond that is the convention center down at the Las Vegas Convention Center,
which is where all the really high tech stuff is. I think
cars, TVs, all
cars
the cool,
that fly.
Yeah, the flying car. did you hear about that one?
I heard about it. Okay. And like some robots playing ping pong and some cool stuff over there.
I love when they just make robots do meaningless things.
Yeah,
like. We were talking earlier about the robot that folds clothes for you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That would be something.
Things
cool.
You never knew you needed, and now that you know that they exist, you have to have them.
At some point in time, it's going to outsource me as a husband, though.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, those are the things that I feel like I bring to the table in our marriage.
Oh, yeah.
And
I wonder if it's better at folding clothes than I am.
I don't know. I mean, you know, and I'm wondering when we're thinking about the clothes folding robot.
Uh-huh.
Like, I know that when my wife does the laundry and when she folds my pants, she'll only like put one fold and fold them in half.
Uh-huh.
Whereas I prefer a two fold, like three section pant fold.
Yeah, we have some folding differences in our household too.
Yeah,
that can be a source of stress sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. And so I'm wondering if there's a setting on the folding robot where you can actually say that, or if I can just talk to it through maybe like a Google or an Alexa and say.
I bet the robot has its own way of doing it, and that you can't really tell it how you want things folded.
So it's gonna be like a stubborn old robot.
Yeah, it's like, this is how I do it.
Like, here, shut up. I'm gonna do it this way. You're gonna do it. You're gonna get your clothes folded.
So now you have like three sources of how to fold clothes in your house.
If you want it do it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fun. So, yeah, we are currently in the United Healthcare booth here. It's a huge booth, like 3,500 square feet, lots of people.
Yeah.
And there's been people coming through all day and yesterday. We're actually here. Our thing that we're doing, Katie, let everybody else know, is we're raising money for the Boys and Girls Club of Southern Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
And we're having athletes or actually participants here just ride some of the UHC bikes.
Yeah.
And now we have on the leaderboard.
Uh-huh.
100 miles.
Yeah, we've got three team bikes set up here and with trainers, and people can get on and ride. But I think we've only really hit 100 miles now over a day and a half. I think some people are a little reluctant to get really sweaty in the middle of a big convention
where they're
trying to impress people. And
it's so true. And then you have like, so this morning we had a guy come through and he actually asked if he could come in early with his kit and so that he can ride.
Yeah.
Like we're like, you know, a Bally's or a Lifetime Fitness or something. I'm like,
we have pretty much the nicest bikes here. There's a couple other booths that have bikes, but none of the bikes as nice as this.
Oh, heck no. Because these are pro bikes.
Yeah, these are our team bikes.
Now, when you see the bikes, because you obviously know all the riders that we have the bikes here for, do you kind of like see a little ghost image of them, or is it kind of weird that you're riding somebody else's bike or like one of your teammates' bikes?
Yeah, because two of the bikes here are from teammates who have retired since last year, and so it's like kind of the last hint of my teammates.
So we're pouring a little water on the ground for them, one for us, right?
Luckily, they're not like gone forever, but I won't get to race with them. So that's a bummer.
It'll be good. Yeah, they'll come back.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about your 2018 that you have coming up.
Yeah.
You're a seasoned athlete. You've been with the team for 3 years.
Yeah. This 2018 will be my fifth year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And how many more years do you kind of see yourself racing as a pro?
A couple more years. I really. Love this job, but I have some other things that I want to do in my career as well. And I'm really all into this right now. So I think a couple more years, and then I'd like to go to school to be a PT.
Awesome. So, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of applications that I'm sure you see and that you've experienced as a professional athlete and different things that you could probably specialize in that maybe people who haven't had that experience could do.
I've had, I think, quite an in-depth journey in movement and thinking about how I move and how I can pedal my bike in a stronger manner and in a way that prevents kind of overuse injuries. And I think using my experience in that, I can kind of help people along their own kind of journeys in movement and recovery from injuries. Like, I've been through it all. So
where did you go to college?
Pomona College in Southern California.
All right. And what did you go to college for?
Chemistry.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when you were in college for your chemistry major, did you have any idea that someday in your future you'd be a professional cyclist?
No. I played water polo my freshman year of college. Then I played rugby.
You played rugby?
I played rugby, and I'm not a big girl.
And you were not the ball?
No. I played wing.
Wow.
I was a runner, yeah. And I didn't start riding a bike until the summer before my senior year of college. I was working in a lab and living with 8 friends in a house for the summer in Seattle and started bike commuting to get to my job because I could get there in less time on my bike than I could in a car. So
cool.
Because the traffic in Seattle was so bad.
So you start off as basically a commuter.
Yep.
And how long between that time and the time you got your first pro contract?
Let's see. So I started racing when I went to grad school at Berkeley.
Okay.
And I raced 1 year and then I kind of took a year off for my qualifying exams for my PhD program. And then I raced another season and I had a really good season as an amateur. And then I applied to race as a pro and I got a pro contract that first
year. Pretty much right away.
Yeah, pretty much right away. Wow. But I had no idea what I was doing when I started. It's really been it happens sometimes where people get into the pro ranks with not a lot of experience.
Yep.
And so my first year was pretty rough, just trying to figure out what it meant to be a pro cyclist and how to be professional. And also I was balancing being a full-time grad student at that time and racing pro.
Job.
So I was spread a little bit thin.
So if you could talk to, let's say, 22-year-old Katie.
Yeah.
What would be some of the sage advice that you would tell 22-year-old Katie?
I would just say, try to find the right mental place to race in. I think that's a big deal for a lot of people, and it comes more easily to some cyclists than others. But one where you are really striving to be the best that you can be, and kind of everyone has their own obstacles in their mind, whether it's self-doubt or some of it can be your weaknesses on the bike.
Yep.
Identifying those and working on them, not being discouraged, but I came in because I had almost no experience in a peloton more than in collegiate, we raced 10 girls at a time. And so that's mostly what I had raced.
We're
and then
quite
I'm,
small.
Yeah. And then I'm in these sometimes a field of 200 in Europe. And just for me, that was a big obstacle, and identifying that and working on that and sort of doing everything I could to, improve my weaknesses.
Awesome. If you had the opportunity to ask 50-year-old Katie a couple of pieces of advice, what would you ask 50-year-old Katie?
I guess I'm curious about how my career path is going from here. I was on a pretty straight and narrow career path for a long time. I was a PhD student. I was going to be a molecular toxicologist.
Wow.
And then I took this big diversion to become a pro cyclist. And so I'm curious, it's not really a question, but when I'm 50, kind of looking back and seeing where my career path has taken me, because this is not a thing that I'm going to do forever.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be a 50-year-old pro cyclist.
Really? Because that seems like such a great lucrative path.
No.
You could survive the injuries. You could have PT Katie taking 20, taking care of you. And
yeah.
That would be good. You have some races that you have on the docket this year, or at least some dream races that you'd like to see, right?
Yeah.
So what would be kind of the top 5 races that you would like to go hit this year?
I first of all, I want to go to Worlds this year. I went to Worlds last year for the first time, and it was a way more amazing experience than I thought it was going to be. Getting to put on the national team jersey and race for my country with just like, yeah, nation American flags and every nation's flags everywhere on the side of the course was just so cool. And this year, the Worlds course is kind of one of the hilliest Worlds courses in the last decade, as far as I know. Oh. And so that is really enticing to me. So I'm trying to figure out how I can qualify and get myself to Worlds this year.
Because you're a climber by design.
So I think, it's a really good course for me. And I want to be there.
All right. So we got Worlds.
Yeah.
What will be the next one?
Next one would be the Giro.
Yes.
So we're talking about trying to get to the Giro as a team this year, and we don't know yet if we'll have an invite, but I really want to race the Giro. So the Giro, it has a couple different names, but Giro Rosa is the biggest, longest, most prestigious stage race for women right now on the World Tour calendar. It's a 10-day stage race in Italy. And I raced it my first year racing when I had no idea what I was doing. And now, like, this will be my fifth year racing, and I have a lot more idea about, like, what it is to be a professional cyclist. And I would like to take on that race one more time with these years of experience under my belt.
So would you come at it with, like, a little bit more strategic tact there?
For sure. A lot more skill than I had in my first year. I'm a stronger cyclist than I was in my first year, too. I know what it is to recover, have more experience with race tactics, race experience, like really trying to get results. Like I think in my first year, I was a support rider and I wasn't trying to get results for myself, but now I would have the opportunity to try to get a stage win or a good GC finish.
And you could be a legitimate GC contender, for the team, if not overall.
Yeah, for
as
the
well.
Team. Yeah. Also, the Giro this year has the penultimate stage is like a 10K climb at 11% or something like that, which is like just a huge hill. Like it took me a while to wrap my head around how big that hill is.
So where would you, if you were trying to simulate that, because you're from Northern California.
Yeah.
Where would be a place that you might train in Northern California to try and simulate something of that epic grind?
Yeah, I have to look. We have a lot of really good long climbs. Not that many of them average that steep. I would actually like to look and see what hill close to me is the closest to that. Because we've got some hills that are steeper than that, but a little bit pitchy, so I'll have to look. But
so if you did go to the Giro, the team would probably have some training camps that would get you get some climbing ahead of that.
Yeah, I think actually we might have some training camps, but probably almost nowhere in the world is going to be as good to train as where I live. And
you're a little skewed on that. You've never trained in Minnesota.
I don't think you're going to find that kind of climb in Minnesota.
Well, my company trainer does like kind of simulate that.
Yeah.
But of course, it's the same.
Yeah.
And then you don't underestimate riding in like moon boots and a snowmobile.
A fat bike maybe.
That's all I'm telling you. Yeah. There's
I'd like to give it a try. It seems like a lot of fun.
I know. Well, you would have to like probably eat some more mayonnaise. You definitely have to. We would have to find some more clothes.
I think though. Riding a fat bike sounds so slow. Like, I feel like it's like the pace of walking, maybe. And that how slow it is would really crack me, too. Like, when I've ridden my bike in New Zealand, and even there, they have this pavement, and I don't know what it is about the pavement, but you go so slow. And it's like really demoralizing.
Is that the chip seal?
The chip seal.
Oh, yeah.
The chip seal in New Zealand is just terrible.
It's really like bumpy, and it's not fun to fall on.
No, I bet it's not fun to fall on. It's it's not even fun to ride on.
No, it isn't.
And it's like windy. And I just like, I love my Santa Cruz Mountains. I don't think it really gets better than that.
Well, so you've ridden in New Zealand.
Uh-huh.
When you were there with your rugby background, did you get a chance to see the All Blacks play?
I didn't, but I would love to see that. I've seen them play on TV, but...
They are a great team.
Yeah, they are cool.
I got to see them...
So much passion.
I watched an All Blacks when they played Australia.
Uh-huh.
I was there for Worlds in Auckland.
Uh-huh.
And so we were at a bar, and I swear every person watching was like the size of a rugby player. And I walked in, I was like this little guy, and they're like, who are you cheering for? And I'm like, All Blacks. Good on you, mate. Come over here. And I'm like, okay, hello.
I'm glad you didn't answer anything else and like maybe get beaten up. Or
I would have been jumped out of there. Yeah. And they were all doing the haka like in yeah. the bar.
Oh my gosh, how intense.
Yeah, it was so cool. It's one, the haka is one of those things that I think is like, that's the coolest thing that New Zealand has as an export. That and like, you know, Kiwi shoe polish.
That's funny. I don't know that. But yeah, the haka is really cool.
It is a lot of fun. Yeah. So have you been able to catch any sights here while you're in Vegas? Like, I know we talked about some of the booths here, but have you seen anything that like has really caught your eye?
Not too much. I really would like to get over to the like really high tech stuff. There's a lot of cool stuff here, I think, with an application to recovery in cycling. I still think they're trying to figure out, like, I'm really interested in heart rate variability as a measure of recovery, and I think they're still working on some of the science of how to interpret heart rate variability, but they can measure it pretty well now. And there's probably like 100 booths here that have monitors that will measure your heart rate variability. Not that they necessarily know what that means for your recovery, but I think they're working on the science of that and trying to figure it out. But it's funny to me that the equipment is so far ahead of the like data interpretation.
The application of it.
Yeah, yeah. I think we can measure it.
Yeah, I can put it on Strava.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, I slept the best out of, I totally killed that nap.
Yeah.
I was looking over the side of us. A lot of it are sleep quality.
Yeah.
And I know that especially for professional athletes, recovery is so vital.
So important.
And especially, you know, from a coaching standpoint, because that's what I do. I coach. And,
yeah.
And trying to identify with athletes, like, where some of the limiters are, like, to try and squeeze the most juice out of the orange.
Oh, for sure.
It's trying to say, you know, how effective is your sleep? How effective is your recovery?
Yeah.
Especially for, like, amateur athletes or elite amateur athletes that have full-time jobs.
Yep.
And that's something I was curious about. Do you, or do the athletes or your teammates, do you track your sleep quality, or do you use any metrics there to try and see, like, and when you go back and say, like, I'm not doing well right now, do you go back and look and say, okay, well, I can attribute that to maybe not having a great amount of sleep, or my rest and recovery hasn't been there? Because I know that you could see, okay, I've not done that many miles, the intensity's been low.
Yeah.
You can look at watts, you can look at data that way, but using sleep that way, it seems that might be another metric to be able to further kind of sharpen the pencil.
I think it's interesting to me because I think sleep is super important, and we all know that, but I'm not sure that measuring it that accurately is like all that helpful. Like, there's 100 booths here also telling you how well you've slept, but like, you just need to sleep well.
Yeah.
And that's a whole different thing. You know, it's good to be able to measure it, but like, you need to have good sleep habits. And like, I know what good sleep habits are. It's like not being on your computer late at night, not having a lot of stress, you know, kind of having some wind down time, going to bed early. There's a lot of things that you can do to improve your sleep, and you can measure it, but also you can just like work on trying to get proper sleep.
I know that like,
I also know how like you feel when you haven't slept very well, and you can listen to your body too, I think, instead of just using metrics.
True. Have you ever used waking heart rate as a measure of kind of tracking where your body's at?
No, but I'm interested in it. And I think that there are really good applications. That could be a really good measure, like sitting and standing and measuring your change in heart rate when you wake up.
Yep.
Can tell you a lot kind of objectively about how well recovered you are. Because I think that is like a bigger issue than training in a lot of ways. Like, I can train really hard, but if I'm not recovering very well, I just work myself into a hole, and I get sick, and I get slower, and the recovery is maybe more important than the training, I think.
I would totally agree. I know that in talking to athletes, especially like amateur athletes that are trying to squeeze as much time as they can in, giving them the prescription of, say, a 30-minute easy run or a 30-minute or a 40-minute easy
ride. Oh, they probably hate that.
Oh, they hate it. And they end up going way too hard.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, it just seems to be a waste of my time. When, in fact, you know, not only from a physiology, but from a mental standpoint, it's important. They need a break. You know, they need a downtime.
Yeah.
And I can see where, you know, that having to be able to not have that could be very detrimental.
Yeah. I think also I'm curious for professionals, like, I think we can just train too much. Like, it's pretty easy to do.
Just go crush it all day long and every day.
Yeah, to just, like, if you have enough time to just ride, like, 5 hours every day, like, you can just put yourself in a hole pretty easily. And I think one of the nice things about being an amateur athlete is, like, you don't have that time to work yourself into a hole. So hopefully you get better recovery, you don't dig yourself in quite so deep because you just don't have the time to. I've seen a lot of women who race in the pro ranks who work another job, who are really smart about their training, and they'll train really high intensity, but in a shorter duration, and really get a lot of benefit from that and be very strong. And so
there's been a lot written recently about kind of that kind of high intensity training, the quick interval training,
yeah,
and the benefits of it, especially from the time crunched athlete. I think there was actually a book, something along that line, crunched athlete, where you know, you have an hour every day to do something, and what are you going to do to try and not negatively impact what you're doing, but still get a good quality workout in. And, I think that's a good spot where metrics can come into, especially when you're talking about, power in the bike, heart rate, or just being able to measure it instead of just saying, I'm going to go as hard as I can.
Yeah.
That's a really important thing. I know that we're in the booth here, we're measuring power, kind of based off an algorithm, but that seems to be the gold standard here for athletes. Now, I think we were talking the other day, and you said that you know some athletes, professional cyclists, that still don't even use any sort of power data.
Yeah, I thought that's crazy. I recently raced on the national team with Skylar Schneider, who is now racing for Bulls Dolmans, but she and her sister have never used a bike computer in their training or racing. So I just thought it was crazy. She was like, how many Ks left do we have of this race? I'm like, you don't know? And they go out and train Skylar finished second at Worlds, at Junior Worlds, without ever having used a computer. So, all those intervals we do, and we think that they are kind of the only thing that make us a good cyclist, there's more to it than that.
Yeah.
Measuring your power output is not everything.
No, and it seems like when somebody buys a power meter, the first thing they want to do is just see how many watts they can put out. When in fact, I think the power meter, one of the best things you can have is for recovery.
Yeah.
When you say, okay, how am I going to make sure that I'm only doing so much and I'm staying in that recovery zone? Using it and saying, okay, don't go over a certain number. Don't break 150 watts. Don't break 120 watts, whatever it might
be. This is very important.
And just go easy.
Yep.
And if you go above that, okay, now we're getting into an area we don't want to be.
And the other thing I think about when you do get a power meter is still listening to your body sometimes.
Yes.
And I think that's how they train, is they go, how do you feel today? I feel like I need a recovery day.
Yep.
Because that's kind of the only, if you don't have numbers, that's what you listen to. And once you get a power meter, still listening to what your body is telling you is very important for your training.
I would think that it's important to have some sort of secondary measurement system, because you can get in a race and a mechanical issue happens where your power meter fails.
Yeah, yeah.
And now what are you going to do? You're going to stop and just kind of go, hey, my power meter's not working.
Yeah.
You got to continue. And you might be, might have another, 60K to go.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to regulate that somehow besides just with what's in front of you. So
yeah. I would say I don't know almost anybody though that uses their power meter for power in a race, except for maybe a time trial.
Yeah.
That's the one time that you want to measure your effort. But when you're racing, it really doesn't matter. You're like, hey guys, this is above my threshold. Please slow down a little bit.
Have you said that?
No. it doesn't matter what you're like. This is how the race is going at this moment. And maybe your training has not prepared you very well for that. But maybe you just don't want to know that.
Well, so first year Katie never said, looked over and goes, can we slow down a little bit? Because I'm really tired right now.
Yeah. I think I've seen more people cover their power, if they can't change the screen on their power meter, put a piece of tape over power data in a road race because they just don't want to know.
Yeah, but they want to be able to see how far they've gone, correct?
Yeah, you want to know probably distance. I like to have a timer on my clock so I remind myself to eat.
Okay.
I like to eat every 20 minutes or make sure I've eaten a certain amount every hour.
Yeah.
And so I think a clock and a odometer, a distance of the race are important pieces of information to have, but I don't know. I don't want to know my power output in a race. I want to see it afterwards, but
yeah, it's good for analytics.
Yeah. Knowing maybe this is where the race got intense and maybe I got dropped, or this is where my weakness was in this race, and being able to look at the power data.
Yeah, I think that'd be very important, especially after the race.
Yeah.
When you go out and prepare for the race and you're getting ready to start, do you or do your coaches or teammates tape kind of the topography, some of the key elements of where the things are in the race on your chop tube? I've seen that happen a lot.
Yeah, we will for sure talk about the race, talk about the course, talk about our race plan. If a lot of times we'll make a piece of tape for the top tube or the stem that has the intermediate sprints or the mountain points, the finish line, especially important turns, like in a really windy course, like here's where we're about to, or here's where we're going to turn into a crosswind, like having that point on your top tube or just knowing that point so that you are in a good position before the race explodes.
Yeah. It seems like those destination points in the race become quite important.
Quite important.
Yeah.
Because you can be caught unawares if you haven't looked at the course.
So I'm gonna make a left-hand turn on us. So we're going to have a little bit of fun here.
Okay.
So I don't know if you've ever followed Prince Harry.
Uh-huh.
Do you know who Prince Harry is?
I do know who Prince Harry is.
So Prince Harry has a podcast, an interview that he does. And he recently did one with Barack Obama.
Uh-huh.
And they did kind of like a, Q&A where they give... You have to pick one or the other, right?
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to give you a number of different things, and I want you to pick what you are. So we kind of get a little bit of insight, a little bit of flavor as to who Katie really is.
What you are, what you like, or...
Exactly. Kind of like that. So I'm going to say two things, and you tell me which is best for you.
Yeah.
Okay? Beach or mountains?
Mountains.
Mountains.
That, I love that kind mountains. Of, yeah.
But you kind of have the best of both worlds, because you have both.
Yeah, but I would say a reformed swimmer. I swam for a long time, all growing up, and I hate to be wet. I hate to swim.
So okay.
Just like the beach, there's nothing fun at the beach for me.
Do you do anything else when you go to the mountains? Do you ski?
I ski. I've snowboarded. I've telemark skied. I've tried cross country skiing. I'd like to do a little cross country skiing this off season.
Multi-talented.
Yeah. There's no snow in Tahoe right now though, so it's been kind of a bummer.
You can go somewhere else. There are other places to ski, you know.
I guess that's true, but not many within driving distance.
You can always go to the Google and just say, hey, where can I go?
Yeah.
All right. Beatles or Rolling Stones?
Beatles.
All right. Espresso or cappuccino?
Pour over.
Pour over.
It's not an option, but it's the best form of coffee.
It is the best option.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll vary that. Uh-huh. Pre-ground or whole bean?
Whole bean. I have my grinder with me. I have a scale. I have a drip cone.
I so love that.
I have a kettle.
Why do I not have you bringing coffee to me every morning?
Yeah, it's true.
I got to think about that next time.
I travel too much, and I like coffee too much to drink shitty coffee in, like, hotels all over the world, so... I just am self-sufficient wherever I go.
I did think about that too here, but I figured that I wasn't going to be able to get a kettle.
Yeah.
I mean,
I have my own kettle that switches 120 to 220 volts, so you can use it in both Europe and America.
Nerd alert.
It's pretty cool. It was a gift from Abby Mickey, also a pro cyclist. Yeah.
That's a good one. That's a good travel thing.
Yep.
All right. Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Wars. I don't have strong feelings on this.
You didn't sound strong on either one of those.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm not that into either of those.
Mechanical or electric shifting?
Electric shifting.
All right. And how long have you been using electric shifting?
We have it only on our TT bikes right now.
Okay.
And it's pretty awesome. I guess I've never had it on a road bike, and I'm not sure I would love charging it. There was I had a friend who came on a ride recently and then disappeared because she hadn't charged her shifting. And I thought, oh, that sucks. So that seems like a headache, but... I just like that you don't have to tune it yourself.
I love the feel of the mechanical shifting.
Yeah.
I still love just kind of the resistance of the cable.
Yep.
Just kind of how that works. I feel like what you become a bike whisperer, right?
Yeah.
You kind of hear, you kind of feel how the bike works.
Yep.
All right. Vacation or staycation?
Vacation.
Favorite place to vacation?
Ooh, favorite place. I'm not into a favorite place, but I'm really into exploring new places.
Okay.
And we've done some traveling in the last year or so. We just did Christmas with my family in Valencia and Mallorca, Spain, which was just one of the most beautiful places I've ever ridden my bike. And this October we took an off-season break where we went to Southeast Asia and met up with some friends there. I went to Laos, Cambodia, and Thailand.
So cool.
Just explored places that I never thought I would see, and I'm really loving just seeing new places and meeting people all over the world. And
you would totally win the passport game.
Yeah.
You must have, like, just your passports could be full.
Yeah.
Like, cool ones, too, not just, like, dumb ones.
Yeah,
like,
it's funny. My husband travels so much for work that he has a double-thick passport.
What?
They, like, send you extra pages once you fill your passport at once. But it's just to and from China. So it's all China stamps.
It's the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah.
All right, beer or wine?
Beer.
All right. In the game of tic-tac-toe, X's or O's?
X's.
X's. Surprisingly, everybody has said X's, and I've asked that
too. That's so funny. I don't know why. I feel like you have to start with an X.
Well, somebody also said if you ask the question by saying O's or X's, would they say O's?
You got to try that.
Yeah, it's subliminal. I don't
know. But it sounds weird when you say O's or X's,
too. I know.
It's
like, so would you like a jelly and peanut butter sandwich?
Yeah.
I'm like, whoa.
What is that? I don't even know.
Who says that type of thing?
Yeah,
right?
That's really funny.
All right.
It's always X's and O's. Yeah.
Comedy or drama?
Comedy.
All right.
And romantic comedy at
rom-com.
That.
Rom-com. That, yeah. that wasn't a thing, but I get you. Okay,
yeah.
Rom-com.
No, it's within comedy, though.
Okay, we'll give it that.
Yeah.
Gum or mints?
Mints.
Okay. And do you have a preferred type of mint?
No, I'm not that big on mints, but...
Okay, so you would not be a mint box hoarder, then? You
wouldn't
be one of those?
I don't have any kind of mint, I think.
Okay. Do you have any mints on you right now?
Nope. Could use one, though, I think.
Yeah, you could. Let me just... It's a little suggestion, a little hint here.
Yeah.
That's why that table's so wide here, and I brought the 25-foot cables.
That's funny.
All right. Apple or Android?
Apple. And also, my husband works there, so if I said anything else, I'd be in big trouble.
You'd come home to divorce papers?
Yeah, maybe.
That would not be good. All right. Well, I'm glad we're not contributing to your domestic breakup.
Yeah, good.
Dog or cat?
I have two cats, but I also really like dogs.
Really?
But as someone who travels a lot, I can't have a dog.
They're hard.
Yeah.
Have you ever traveled with your cat before?
No, but they're Mariana Voss. Yeah. Her family travels with a cat.
What?
It's at all the races. They have, like, a little RV and a cat that, like, sits on the step of the RV.
That's
and
crazy.
And there's, like, always this cat at the races.
What's its name?
I have no idea.
What are your cat's names?
Mingus and Sadie Cat.
Sadie Cat.
Yeah.
Best name ever.
She is a cute cat.
She is. She is a rescue, is that correct?
Yep. I have a one-eyed cat named Sadie Cat. And my dad calls her Winky.
Aw.
Yeah.
Look at that. All right. In the paper, crossword or Sudoku?
I'm not that good at either of these things. I think I like a crossword, but I really like NPR.
Because
that's my, like, morning routine is, like, coffee, some breakfast, some NPR in the background.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. You listen to The Puzzle, then,
yes.
Every week.
Yep.
How accurate do you come, or how close do you come to answering those?
Sometimes pretty good, but... A lot of times, that is just not how my brain works.
No.
It's like scouring knowledge, common knowledge. Every time they say the answer, I'm like, oh, yeah,
that's it.
That's it. But so, I'm really impressed with people who are good at those kinds of things.
Have you ever spotted anybody wearing the pin?
No. I don't think I have.
Neither have I.
Oh, that would be cool.
Wouldn't it? If you saw them, would you be like, you won the puzzle.
Yeah.
My shorts is your...
You're genius. That's cool.
That would be cool. All right. Burger or pizza?
Pizza.
Pizza. Do you have a favorite place to go for pizza?
A couple places. Actually, Tayroon is a pizza place in the South Bay near where I live that's run by a bunch of Italian cyclists, and it's sort of like almost like a community center for cyclists near where I live.
Okay.
And it's really wonderful. Just like they'll host like a Sunday morning ride, and they'll pull espresso shots first.
Oh, nice.
And send everybody out on a ride and come back, and they'll come back and eat pizza. And it's just a really...
That sounds awesome.
Not only is like the food delicious, but the people are just awesome.
I got to try that sometime.
Yeah, if you're ever in the South Bay, Tayroon.
All right. Last one is the defining question that I have for you. Uh-oh. This is going to determine if we're going to be friends or if we're going to be enemies.
Uh-huh.
You ready for this?
Uh-huh.
Biggie or Tupac?
Tupac.
Yes! High five! West Coast love in the house!
Yeah.
Katie, I can't thank you enough for all the time today.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Really enjoyed having you on, and wish you all the best of luck this year.
Thank you so much.
And maybe if you're in the Giro, we might see you there.
Yeah, that would be so cool.
All right, thanks so much.
Best of luck.
All right, everybody, thanks for being with us this week. Look for next podcast coming up, and we'll talk to you later. If you say-